I'm Emily Theed, author of This Vicious Grace, coming in summer 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the Queery Trenches.
And you're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches.
Break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Hey!
There we go.
We did it.
One victory for the day.
Oh, it's been a challenge.
Yeah, probably because we've run out of brain cells.
I mean, who hasn't at this point in
true
the recent history of the world?
We suggested the topic of burnout. I was like, I don't have any advice. My entire podcast episode would be me going, yes. Me too.
Yeah. Same. I think I just survived burnout, like a work style burnout. So
I don't think I've survived it yet.
Yeah.
But I feel bad because I feel like it makes it sound like it's the writing is causing the burnout, but it's not. It's life's causing the burnout.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to write when you're feeling burnt out.
Right.
But we're not going to talk about burnout today. No, we're not talking about burnout. We're talking about how we're not talking about burnout.
Yes.
But we feel you and we hear you, all of you, and we're hugging all of you because I feel like it's all of us these days.
It's everyone. We're all here together. We meet on Wednesdays. There are cookies involved.
Gosh, I really wish that was true.
Wouldn't it be nice?
I got it stuck in your head now.
Listen, there was a part where... I think I kicked it. Did I not kick it off? I think you kicked it off because then I was like, you couldn't find that file in the drive. And I was like, wouldn't it be nice if we did that? Save that in the file.
We're crushing it. We're doing great.
We are doing so great.
We're so proud of ourselves. This is going to be the pep talk episode. No, it's not. Yeah. But we're just working on that in general. We're all doing great.
Everyone has to listen to 45 minutes of us just encouraging each other and giving ourselves pep talks.
Honestly, I bet we could make a 24-hour a day, like on a loop, just not even a podcast, just like a streaming thing of just us being like, you're doing great.
You're doing great.
This chapter will get better later. And writers would just like tune in and just be so happy.
Did you write one word instead of 1,000 yesterday? You champion!
Did you not write any words? Good. That's you needed a break.
You did great.
You did. I got a good pep talk yesterday.
Else.
Our friend Natalie sent me a good pep talk yesterday, which was greatly appreciated. She's like, you already know all this. And I was like, I do, but I still needed to hear someone else say it.
She's so good at it.
She is so good at it. She's good at it. Ah, yes. Getting back in that pep talk mode.
Woo!
Pitch Wars is coming. Time to remember all we love about writing, which we do love writing. It's just the world is a dumpster fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll bring some, like, joy, right, is
I hope so.
Working with someone else.
Yeah, so and I am, you know, as now that it's public information, I am teaming up with Lauren Blackwood, and we're just going to have a lot of fun. It's going
to
be a lot
of fun. Man, if you all enjoyed the energy of that episode,
oh my gosh,
imagine
I know,
what it would be like to be mentee.
I feel like I need to warn our future mentee, though, that, like, there'll be more DMs than you really want in your life, but that's okay.
Their required homework before they say yes to being your mentee is they have to listen to that episode. And then
I feel like that's
really
fair.
Think about it. Really think about it.
Make sure you know what you're getting into.
It's going to be great.
We've been trying to come up with our team name, and it's been rough. Because everything, it's like either everything like sounds too innuendo-y or like it doesn't. Yeah.
Team. Ready? I got this. Team hashtag chaos kisses.
Honestly, that might be it.
Chaos kisses.
I'm gonna tell Lauren that.
Just saying.
Because we were trying to come up with something that implied sort of like romance, and I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this stuff. Never mind.
We both know. Here's the thing. Don't never mind this. It's not part of the.
It's
I know
not my
Emily's
wish list.
Trying to do.
I'm just
Emily's
talking
trying
about
to do
things
right now
I like.
Is she can't talk about wish lists. She can't talk about whatever. But if you know Emily and you know Lauren, you know they like
Lauren and Emily kisses. Are. So yeah, that we are the chaos kisses. Duh. Not we're not kissing each other, but that's the brand. That's the energy
and
we're
they
bringing.
Are chaotic.
Yes. Yeah.
Done.
There you go. There you go.
There it is.
That's good. That is correct.
Team chaos kisses.
That
I saved
fair.
It. See, you don't have to explain.
Yeah.
I did it for you.
Yeah, you listen to the episode and you're going to be like, okay,
I got it. They're chaos and they like kisses.
We do. Cool. We do. Yeah. And yeah, Lauren, for the record, this topic in part came up because we just, Anna and I, in real time, are putting on Twitter that we don't know what to talk about. So people are suggesting ideas right now. And Lauren's suggestion was kissing scenes.
If you have seen this on Instagram or Twitter, that happened while recording.
While recording. This is how prepared we are.
So if you think we know what we're doing.
We do not. We do not. We do not. Honestly, we probably would have given up, except that I don't want to go right now. So I told Anna we have to keep going.
And I tried real hard to get us to take a break. Miss burnout.
We'll take a break after this, but this is not the burnout. This is the break from the burnout. This is talking to my Anna, which I need in my life.
As you think.
Yeah.
We'll see if we make it through this episode.
We will, because I actually really need you to teach me our topic. Our topic for today, folks. By the way, hi, Anna. We're going to talk about multiple points of view. Solo points of view, dual point of view, multiple points of view, because I am working on a dual POV now, which will be the second time I've done it.
Woo.
And I forgot what a mess it is. So Anna's going to school me.
Hi. I think the only reason why I have any authority on this topic is because I
started with a dozen points of view.
Yeah. So the first book I wrote, we all know like books teach you things, right?
Yes.
So when you write a book, you kind of learn something and then you realize how little you know about writing. And then you're like, wow, I wrote a whole 86K thing and I didn't know what I was doing, and then you have to learn more, so then you're like, okay, I've learned something, let me apply it.
Did you really have 6 points of view and keep it under 90,000? Because that is bananas.
Yeah. So after I wrote a single point of view, third close paranormal contemporary, I was like, you know what we need right now? We need, and here's the twist. I'm not getting the number wrong. We need a 5 point of view sci-fi space opera heist.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Anna likes a challenge.
Woo!
Good. I'm just trying to picture, because I know that you've said on the podcast before that your mentor said, like, you know, each, which is true, like each point of view character should have their own character arc. And I'm trying to picture, trying to get 5 character arcs.
Yeah.
In one. Wow.
It was, So I don't know what energy I'm bringing to this episode, but I think it's the kind of energy that I feel looking back at myself being like, you brilliant, brilliant overachiever, you.
Bless you went yourself. All in. And see, but the good thing about it is when you tackle a challenge in a book that's maybe above your current pay grade, it theoretically makes future projects less daunting, at least in that one particular area.
In all honesty, yes. It's always a different process when you write a book, right? We've talked about that, like each book.
Why is that?
Yeah. But at least it was easier. When I settled down to write the next book, my challenge, I was like, all right, fine. I already know how to write, bunny ears around that. I already know how to write 6 different points of view. And where the 6 comes in is my mentor, Lindsay, that we had on the podcast, Lindsay Ely. She was like, yeah, I just really feel like this one character you introduce could be a really cool, like, midpoint character to introduce and give her a point of view. And I was like, oh.
But again, at that point, if you're 6. Dividing 90K by 6, I mean, what? That's a couple chapters. Like, they can't, none of them. Well, that's what we'll talk about. We'll talk about switching by chapters.
Because I have some tricks and tips up my sleeve.
I've got my notepad ready. I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I just moving on, like, the second book I wrote, like, the third book I wrote after that, I was like, okay, my challenge is not to write a character arc because it's one point of view. I can do that. It's now to write first person. So you're right. Once you do dual point of view, things become a little easier. And, like, some things click. That didn't click before, so that's really nice. So I guess, like, the first thing that I think helped me was what you said that I think a lot of people don't realize about multiple points of view is that the character, if you give a character a point of view, they have to go through some kind of character arc. It does not have to be dramatic. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to, you know, be a positive to a negative to a positive. It doesn't have to be anything like that. It can just be a romance arc that they go through. And that's what they needed, right? But they do, each character has to have a need. They have to have a want. And then you have to fulfill that somehow.
And yeah, and I think it's important to mention that the reason we say this isn't necessarily like because we're just giving authors an extra thing to do. It's more that if that character is not going to grow and change in some way, there's a good chance that they don't need to be a point of view character, and that maybe as an author, we're using them as a shortcut to like show stuff, and that's not always necessary. Yeah. So it's more like a check in with yourself and ask myself, like, what am I using this point of view character for?
Yes.
And do they really need a point of view? Because if they are static throughout the story, you know, and there are situations, I think, where you can break this rule. Like, for example, if a book is like majority one character's point of view, and then you have this like lurking danger antagonist or something that gets little snippets throughout. But we're more talking about like when a character gets kind of equal page time.
Yeah.
Why do they get that page time? And is there a good reason for it? Because if it doesn't feel like they're really doing anything to drive the story, they're just kind of like there to like tell what's going on at the other side of the world. Readers, I think it's important to say that every time you switch point of view, you potentially can lose a reader's interest. Because as much as we want them to be equally invested in every character, they're not necessarily going to. And if they read that first chapter, for example, and they love your main character, and then you switch to four more characters, and they don't equally love them, each time you switch, you're asking the reader to leave behind something that they just got invested in and go to something else.
Oh, for
and
sure.
That can be a challenge. So
I will, like, an example of that is a couple of years ago, I don't know why I did this to myself, and it's, I don't regret things in life, but it's almost there. It's almost there. Like when I die, they'll be like, do you have any regrets? And I'll be like, well, there was that one time I forced myself to read all of the Game of Thrones books.
Wow. That's a lot. That's not even like a lot of books. That's just a lot of pages. Cause each of those books is like, wow.
It was good. I was glad I was a part of that fandom while it lasted. And then the show was ruined. So whatever. and then we'll never get the other books, but whatever. It's over. True. It's done. It's behind me.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is true, because I did catch myself, especially with those books. They're their own special kind of like adult fantasy.
Yeah. And we are always coming from a point of view of people that are really, that were kind of, what is it? Not born and raised, but we came up through YA world. And the rules can be very different for adult expansive fantasy. But
the thing you're talking about exists there, and it transfers over to young adult, which is when I was reading those books, I hated every chapter from Cersei's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I love her character. Hated everything from her point of view, because I was like, I don't care. I care less. Like, I couldn't care less. I don't care. Get out of here. And I would catch myself flipping forward to be like, how many times, like, when is Tyrion? When is Arya? When are they going to show back up again? And then also, if you've read those books, you know, and it's a thing that people commonly do with like multiple points of view is George R. R. Martin definitely uses points of view to show things that you might not see.
Yeah, because that's a huge world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, that's like aside, but that rule does stand, like, stay for any kind of fiction, is if you're reading and they don't like somebody's point of view, you're going to catch them like flipping ahead, right? Yeah. You're going to catch them looking for like, when am I going to get to that other person that I really love? It happens with Six of Crows,
especially,
right?
If you're a newer writer. Yeah. Like, it's great. Like, we just talked about how attempting to write that was a great thing for Anna, and Anna learned a lot from it. But like, it's just, I find it a very good rule of thumb to ask myself, because I found in the past where I've thought, oh, well, I can add this other character point of view, because then I don't have to explain this, because I can show it from over there. And I just think it's a really good habit to get into, to ask yourself, do I need this? And I think sometimes too, you know, I think we act sometimes as writers that like the reader wants all the information. And a lot of times, not only do they not want all the information, not only do they not really want to know what's happening on the other side of the world, it's not relevant to them. If it's relevant to the main characters, then it's important. But if it's relevant to the main character, then the main character's gonna find out about it. Uh-huh. And I think it can reduce the tension because a little mystery can be good.
Well, that word tension is so, like, that's, I think that's really the thing with multiple points of view is you are, if you do it well, if you master it, like, I guess if you just master it, it's this idea that you are holding the reader at several different points of tension. And by switching point of view, you're holding them suspended over here with a question that needs answering. But now you're going to go back and answer this question they've been suspended on mm-hmm. with another point of view. So I'm reading Rule of Wolves right now. Mm-hmm. And if you've read the King of Scars trilogy, like the duology, it's Nikolai. And if you've just read Shadow and Bone and you are catching up, maybe take a break. Go get some water. Here we go. It's Nikolai, Zoya, and Nina are the three main points of view. There are a couple other points of view scattered in, which we can talk about later. But you're always like asking a question about Nikolai. And then once that's over, Zoya shows up and you're like, oh, good. Man, I really want this question answered, but I'm really excited to answer like Zoya's question. I'm mm-hmm. really excited to answer that. Oh, dang it. I have another question. And now we're going to Nina. Okay, fine. Nina, what I'm going to answer. Like you're constantly ping-ponging them between how these things interweave and connect, but keeping them suspended in that tension, which is so – it's difficult. It's really hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I do think we should talk about – I feel like this is hard because when you talk at like point of view, meaning – how many points of view, but also point of view meaning like third person, first person.
Yeah.
Because I also, and again, like nothing is an absolute.
Uh-huh.
But I will put it on the record that I think to some extent with dual point of view, but especially with more than that, the choice of first person versus third person can be really important.
Absolutely.
Because first person is hard with dual mm-hmm. point of view, you know, you do – the goal is that every point of view chapter has enough voice in it that it feels like the character, that if you put that book down and you pick it up later, that you know exactly who's talking, which is a big challenge. And that's true whether it's third or first. But in first, there's even more responsibility there because every time that character says I instead of it being third person where you're saying the character's name – it's very easy to go, wait, hold on, whose yeah. point of view am I in? And, you know, a lot of authors do, they put the, you know, the name at the beginning of the chapter, but I don't know about you, I don't always stop reading at the end of a chapter. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times if I am reading a dual point of view book and it's in first person, I will pick it up and I have to do that thing where I go back and try to remember, like, where am I? Whose point of view is this? Yeah. Especially when those characters are not together. So I tend to think that, you know, dual point of view is easier with third. Mm-hmm. Especially once you get to more than two characters, I will just
– yeah.
I will warn most writers away from doing first person when you have three or more characters.
Yeah.
That is hard. I mean, that's really, really, really challenging. If Absolutely. You can do it, power to you. It you're asking a lot more of your readers because they have to keep track of a lot more stuff.
I always steer people towards this whenever we talk about going with first person point of view in mm-hmm. a multi-point of view book. If you want to try that and you want a masterclass in it, please go read N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season.
Oh, N.K. Jemisin can do anything.
Mm-hmm. That book is a masterclass in points of view, how to do it with first person, how to play with tense, and also how to play with foreshadowing. And I'm speechless. Like it's such a great book and such a great series. So that's
one that just thinking of homework. Playing with all those things at once, like has me like a little dizzy.
there was a point where I figured something out before because my husband and I read it at the same time
mm-hmm.
and we would read a chapter a night and I would always be a little bit ahead of him. And there was one night where I had to stop and he caught up and he finished the whole chapter and he's like, you're not finished yet. And I was like, I can't finish this chapter because I am immobilized by what she has done. Like yeah. I paused, like time froze. And I was like, I can't think about how she did this and how long it took her to do this. And
oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Incredible.
Ridiculous.
So like try it, folks, try it. But also yeah. if this is maybe your first book that you're planning to query, just don't be surprised if it's harder to pull it all off.
It's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Like on the one hand, I'm like, try it, give it a shot, do it. But also like recognize that it's really, there are just things that just that make it harder for you as a writer, that make it harder for a reader to stay invested, for them to keep track of things. It's just more mental labor.
And I think it's
go ahead.
Oh, no. I think the reason why N.K. Jemisin's fifth season is such a good example of breaking those point of view, I guess, like point of view intense barriers is you have to do it with purpose. Yeah. And once you finish the book, you realize the purpose and you kind of like have this that moment of paralyzation where you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. Like, okay. I think you can do anything you want with purpose. Mm-hmm. Just ask yourself, why are you showing this point of view? Why are you changing the tense here? Why are you keeping the tense there?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times for newer writers, and I know for me, those choices I made were made because I thought it would be easier, that it was a short, you know, like I thought first person was just, it was easier to have it feel close, which I don't think is actually true. I thought that having, you know, two points of view for this would be good because, like you said before, then I could show two different things happening in two different places, like whatever. And I would say that that didn't really count as using it as intention for me. I was using it because it seemed like an easier way to solve a problem when what really I needed was to figure out how to solve those problems as a writer. And that could work.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that you're right, though. It is a good way to show two of the different things that are happening.
Oh, yeah. I'm just not sure I needed to show those different things that were happening. And it wasn't until after I did it that I thought, oh.
Yeah.
I wanted to avoid an info dump, so I created a whole other point of view character when I could have just figured out how to convey the same information. I didn't need to do that. That happens a lot in like prologues. You know, a lot of times people do a prologue, which is from a different point of view, which isn't quite the same thing as a multiple point of view, but they need the reader to know something that happened historically or happened to the main character's parents or something. And again, that can work. But like we said before, every time you switch, like, I would argue that that's one of the main reasons why agents and editors often don't like prologues is because you're asking readers to get invested in a character who they usually will then not see again or will not be a main character again. And so you're doing the work of a first chapter twice, because the most important job of a first chapter is to get your reader invested in that character. Mm-hmm. And so if you're having a prologue, which is a different character, a different point of view character, you're asking them to invest in that character, and then you're saying, okay, start over and do it again, which is just, again, you're asking more of your reader. And especially if you are not an established author who has a loyal band of readership, you know, that's just a bit of a risk at times. That's all. I will also say the first time I tried to write dual point of view, I started with the alternating chapters. And quickly realized that was not working for me because I had like a chapter that was 500 words, and then I'd have a chapter that was 3,000 words because just, and so I ended up finding a much happier medium in switching by scenes. And again, this works, I don't want to say only, but kind of only if you're using close third. In first person, switching within a chapter is usually not encouraged. Yeah. So if you're writing in first person, dual point of view, the general kind of rule of thumb, I would guess what I would say is to alternate chapters. When you're doing third, you can alternate by scene. It is really important. One tip that someone told me a long time ago was to make it as clear as possible in the first sentence whose point of view it is, which can be tricky, especially when the two main characters are in the same room or in the same conversation. Because just saying, you know, this character did this doesn't automatically tell you, but like I basically try to get to the point where I almost always use the point of view character's name first in their scenes, because it's just a cue to the reader that like, we're okay, now we're in this person's point of view. But that's where I run into the wall and start crying because I forgot how hard it is. Oh God, it's so hard.
It is so hard.
It's so hard, Anna.
I think it's also that's a really good rule of thumb for even if you're doing it chapter by chapter. Use that character's name, like ground them as quickly as you can into what point of view they're looking from.
Yeah, which is hard in first person because you're saying, you know, I, whatever. But yeah, so like, especially if you're a character, say they're in like different settings. If you're switching in first person, that opening line of that chapter, if you give as many clues as possible to like where that character is.
Yeah.
You know, like the damp cement was cold against my back or whatever. Then you're reminding them, okay, hey, remember this character was passed out on the jail floor.
Yeah.
We're on the jail floor again. That's who this is. Because again, with the eye, unless someone walks in and goes, hey there, Bobby, in the jail cell. Like it can be really hard.
Yeah. I was definitely reading from third person. Like.
Yeah. And third. Yes. But yeah. But in first person. You gotta use other clues
for sure.
Because I don't know about you. I never read the little thing that says whose point of view it is, even if it's first person. And then a lot of times I will make it halfway down the page and go, "Oh wait, oh no, this is I was thinking it was a different one, and that's my fault." But still,
yeah.
So choosing whose point of view each scene or chapter is from.
Yeah.
Help me, Anna. I feel like this is one of those. If you're a plotter, we have all these like great rules of thumb, which we will talk about for if you're a plotter. If you're a pantser like me who writes out of order, that's when this gets really ugly because half of my revisions ends up rewriting scenes from the other person's point of view because I just come up with like a bit of dialogue and I write it. And then I'm like, oh, no, because again, even in third, I guess we should probably clarify that, too, because I've heard people say, oh, well, you know, I'm writing in third person, so it doesn't matter. And it's like, no, that's not true. Even in third person, if you have multiple points of view, each scene or each chapter has to be told from one person's, like, you can't, we run into the issue. No, okay, not you can't, you can. But again, general rule of thumb is to avoid what we call head hopping, which is where within one scene, you are sharing things with the reader that more than one character can't know. Like, if I was telling, you know, right now, like, Emily and Anna are talking on the podcast, and, you know, Emily felt, you know, like, maybe she wasn't contributing smart things, whereas Anna felt, okay, well, now we're in omniscient. Now we're head-hopping a little bit, because I don't know what Anna's thinking. So even though I'm saying it in third person, I could say, like, Emily felt like she wasn't holding up her end of the podcasting. I'm trying to think of what we would be worried about. This is a tense situation. And Anna looked concerned, too. So Anna looked, because I'm looking at Anna, and I can say what's happening in Emily's head, because it's told from Emily's point of view. So I just want to put that out there, that even in third person, you are still choosing a point of view most of the time, unless you're doing omniscient, which is another one of those, like, you can, but you better make sure you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yes, well, I will have these entire dialogue scenes where I've set it up so that it's clear which character is the point of view character, and then I realize, oh, I did that wrong, and then I have to go back and change it all.
Right.
Oh, fun.
Right.
School me, Anna. School me.
Okay, so I think the original question was when, like, how to choose who gets what scene. And one thing, it can always change. So when you're going back and editing, you can be like, oh, man, I really want this in this person.
What I'm doing now.
So sometimes I hold on to that darling where it's like, no, I really feel like I want this from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of different things. The first and the biggest one that will probably be a catch-all for a lot of folks is who has the most to lose.
Yep.
In that chapter, if there is a conversation, a confession of love, who has the most to lose and how effective can you make that for them?
Yeah.
So if they are worried about confessing their love and they're worried it's not going to be reciprocated, you can show it from their point of view. You can be artsy and show it from the other point of view. And maybe that other person had something to lose, which is their, you know, this is their best friend. And they're just so glad that it's so stable. And
yes.
In your heart, you've already listened to a couple chapters and read a couple chapters from the other person's point of view. And the other person is like, no, I really love them. And I'm brave and I can do this. And I can take it to the next level. And now we just suddenly learn, oh no, they're going to confess their love. And now this person wants them to just stay friends. Oh no. So like,
yeah. Oh, that's such a good example because, yeah, if character A is confessing their undying love and character B is happy and loves them too, mm-hmm. and you have it from character B's point of view, then there's no tension in this scene. Then it's just like, oh, nice. Oh, wow, they do love me. Yay. That's not the tension. The tension is coming from the person that's like, okay, I'm going to make this confession. I don't know how they're going to receive it because by putting us in that character A's point of view, watching character B react, we were sitting there on the edge of our seats going, ooh, is this going to be received well? Is this not going to be received well? Like, choosing that tension. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just depends on where you want that tension, how you want to create that tension. And I think that, again, is who has the most to lose. And even then, it's not even who has the most to lose. Okay, maybe this character B has the most to lose, but now we learn character A has this one specific feeling and we know how it's going to pan out for character B. We don't know how this is going to pan out for character A. Mm-hmm. And that would be like an excellent place to do a chapter break and then switch to the other point of view and be like, okay, now we get to see the fallout because we know this person doesn't return their feelings. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that character B? And what are you going to do with that information? So that's probably like the biggest catch-all I have for who gets what point of view. I also think it's a thing of when, for me, I end up drafting things in advance. So I draft like little snippets and chapters and I think, ooh, this would be really cool. Like this is a really cool thing to see from this character's perspective as they're falling off a cliff, right? And I think that has to stay in their point of view. Mm-hmm. Now I have to justify that with the rest of the chapter.
Yeah.
But, you know, playing with that. And then I also think playing with order, the order in which things happen in the book, that also determines who gets what point of view. And, you know, maybe you want to have your reader dangle on this like thing of, oh, my gosh, is that character still alive? Maybe don't show their point of view next. Don't. Show it the other character. Show them somebody else. Show them something else, somewhere else, and let them have that question for a minute. Like, let them sit in that, like, oh, my gosh, I have to find out. And that gets them to read another chapter. So
yeah, and that's what I will say, too, that, like, try not to get too attached to a pattern. Like, it's okay to have a pattern. It's good to establish patterns. But also, don't let the pattern decide who has to be the point of view. Like and I think I did that. That's what I was kind of doing with this previous book that I wrote is like when I was trying to alternate chapters, I kept thinking, okay, well, I have to tell this from this person's point of view because the last chapter was from the other person's point of view. Yeah. And that's not the point. And I ended up switching to scenes. And then I think I kind of did the same thing for a little while. I felt like I had to do one and then the other and one and then the other. And I was trying to, you know, force that square peg into the round hole and it wasn't working. And it wasn't until I gave myself the freedom to say, okay, no, you pick the person who needs to be that scene. And it's okay if that scene is really short. That was the benefit of switching to scenes from chapters.
Yeah.
Was that I could have that reaction beat that person, you know, the other person stomping off from the fight and having their big feels, even if it was just a page or so. And then go back to the character that I needed. So, because otherwise I ended up writing like all this just fluff, just nothingness, just because I was trying to have a balance. And balance is kind of overrated, honestly.
I will say, yeah, I will say that is the biggest thing that when I started doing my revisions for my Pitch Wars book, I ended up trying to write a whole bunch of fluff to kind of justify this with five characters. I was like, well, we'll just rotate through them. Yep. And that was unnecessary because I did end up being like, okay, well, now I'm back to, you know, there was a character named Zari, and I was like, I'm back to her now. I guess I have to write some stuff for her to justify this little section. And it was like, well, I don't have to justify that little section. Maybe that little section can come later. Mm-hmm. Maybe that little section can be added into something bigger, and then it cycles back to the main character for two chapters or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is kind of like the third thing that I have that really helped me and helps with the cycle thing. Is yes, your cast may be 6 points of view, or it could be 12, or it could be whatever. Ooh. Like,
Power
King of Scars is blowing me away with random points of view showing up.
And like, again,
and it's only for a hot minute.
None of them are rules, they're just suggestions. And at a certain point, you can break every rule on the planet.
Yep.
But we're talking to the people that aren't necessarily the Leigh Bardugos of the world and, the Holly Blacks and all that. So,
That's but the third thing is you could have all those points of view, but normally one to two characters will be your anchor point of view, what they call an anchor point of view. So even in your book, Emily.
Yes.
Yes, you have 2 points of view, but I have a sneaking suspicion that one character is your anchor point of view. And usually, not always.
Anna is holding me up. Anna is holding me up in the ocean. I'm drowning. And Anna's like, you got this. Anna knows everything about this.
Usually, the anchor point of view is that first point of view. Not always, but usually your anchor point of view is going to be that first one because first impressions are really important, right?
Yeah. So when you're telling, they're cueing the reader who to. Yeah. And, you know, I've actually seen, so there's I'm not the only person out there that's, obviously, that wrote, you know, a single point of view book and then has a sequel that's dual point of view. I've actually talked to a number of people writing duologies that are doing this. And yeah, and I think, especially in that case, when you already have readers who are accustomed to one point of view, in my opinion, then when I'm starting a book, when suddenly I'm switching to two points of view, if I start with the same main character point of view in book two and then add a second point of view, there's, again, you can use that really intentionally.
Uh-huh.
I didn't necessarily want a moment where my readers go, oh, wait, what? So-and-so has a point of view now? Like, hold on a second. Like, I want that to be the first thing they realize. I want that to be how they start their experience.
Yes.
And again, I can think of some, you know, really cool kind of hypothetical examples of when you would actually want the opposite, when you really want the readers to go, oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm going for with this. Mine is more, I want to tell readers from the start, this point of view character, who was not your previous point of view character, is now suddenly stepping into the limelight in a new way. So get your emotional investment there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Just because we've been, I've been rewatching it. My husband is watching it for the first time. If you haven't seen The Good Place.
I love The Good Place.
The Good Place is fantastic because as a TV show, it does this point of view shift beautifully.
Yeah.
If you know, I won't spoil it because it's such a great show and I never want to spoil it, but watch the first season, and at the end of the first season, it does something that you typically don't do with points of view, which is like, I want to show things, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It does it with intention and it does it beautifully to where you're just laughing the whole time and also going, oh my gosh, the whole time.
Yeah. And TV, I think so many of us are so accustomed to TV that's sometimes when we start writing, especially those of us who start writing, maybe not as young, I think it's kind of natural to base some of our writing styles on what we see in TVs and movies, mm-hmm. and that we do run into a bit of trickiness there because with TV and movies, point of view is handled a little differently.
Oh, yeah.
I would argue that still most of the time there kind of is a primary character, but not necessarily. I mean, like, if you have two actors on screen in a movie or a TV show, each of those actors are, like, they are creating a point of view situation. I mean, and again, it mm-hmm. depends. Like, there are definitely, you know, I can think of movies and TV shows where it's so clear who the main character is and you're seeing the other characters kind of through their eyes and how they treat them. But there are also examples in TV movies where, like, we have a cast of six characters and they're all getting equal screen time. We are not necessarily supposed to be seeing the group from one character.
Well, that's why I suggested The Good Place, is because The Good Place is every episode is from a character's point of view.
Yes.
Like, they are very clearly... It's not like watching The Vampire Diaries where it's like...
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's important for writers to remember that you do not have the luxury of having actors who can carry it. Like, you still need to make a decision about who your point of view character is, why you're choosing their point of view, because it's a different format. And you're asking a different thing from a reader than you would be asking from a viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So watch TV and movies, but don't just try to translate them into a book, because that isn't necessarily how books work. And sometimes books don't work at all. That's just me speaking of myself. It will eventually. Yeah. See, for me, it really is the, like, I know all the rules. But like I said, I don't write in order. And a lot of times, especially it's these really dialogue heavy scenes where I'm kind of spitballing. I'm seeing where it goes. I'm writing it. But someday I will learn to just write the dialogue. I can't do it because I think of scenes. Like, I picture the characters, and I use a lot of action beats, and so I have a tendency to use all of that, and to do that, I do have to decide who the point of view character is, because it's the difference between what someone's feeling, what someone's seeing, and all of that, internal reactions. You know, if I have a character that, you know, feels a chill of dread, well, that needs to be my point of view character, because otherwise I'm head hopping. And so I write these long dialogue scenes, and then I realize at the end of it, like, oh, I picked the wrong point of view character, and I've just created a bunch of work for myself. Or I write a scene that has a lot of dialogue, and then I end up splitting up that dialogue and putting in different scenes. And again, then I have created a lot of work for myself. So someday, future smart Emily will just write the dialogue and just trust that she will remember all those beats and tags. And that will simplify my process a lot, because it's this part when I'm starting to do that first big revision and I'm moving stuff around that I've just added a layer of work for myself with every scene, which is so fun. It's fun. Gonna be great. Also, I will say we talk a lot about voice and about how that's something that you kind of layer in a later process. I will say, too, that that is also one of the things that when I, for me at least, the early process of writing dual point of view means I spend a lot of time telling myself, it's okay, you're going to add the voice in later because these characters have different voices. And so it feels very, you know, like I think I told you yesterday, I feel like I have these cardboard cutouts of my characters being like, hello, how are you today? I'm fine. How are you today? Like, they're just like the dialogue isn't working the way I want it to because I haven't really decided whose head I'm in. And once I decide whose head I'm in, then I'm going to edit those dialogue scenes and the action beats in a way that works to create the most tension for the character I've chosen. But not there yet.
I feel that.
Yeah.
And I guess the only thing that popped in my head with voice is it's a clever way to disperse some tension or create some comedy. So you can have something really tragic happen in one person's point of view. And or not tragic, but something that you think, oh, man, it's going to hit the fan. It's going to be ridiculous. This is going to, and then you can switch to the next person's point of view and they're like, yeah, it's no big deal. And then you're like, you have this like kind of giggle moment and then you find out what's really the big deal or whatever. Like, it's a really, it's a great way to create tension. It's a great way to create comedy. It's a great way to use it for anything that you want to elicit emotional wise.
Totally.
You know, I have in the book that I was querying, I pause now, I don't know. But in that baking book, there's a chapter that ends on like basically the note of like, this is going to be great. It'll be just fine. And then the next chapter starts with the other person's point of view. And they're like, she's the most annoying thing I've ever had in my house ever. I hate this. I hate her. I hate everything. Get her out. And it's, you know, it's this little like moment where I still giggle when I read it. So it's a great way to create tension, to create comedy, to create romance even. Just thinking about what information, and it doesn't always have to be this way because usually for some points of view, if they're across the map, but even then if they're across the map, it can do this. What information did you get in the previous chapter that makes the chapter before it even more intense? So usually you get like a nugget of information that makes you go, oh, how's that character going to respond? Oh my gosh. And then you get that information in the next chapter and it totally blows everything.
Or you set it up because you are using one point of view to inform the reader of this character's maybe misunderstanding or their assumptions so that when you switch to the other character and they present information, you as the reader are going, oh no, I already know the character A is not gonna take that well because they're gonna think this, this, this. And there was a conversation on Twitter the other day about the miscommunication. So, you know, the why don't people talk to each other and how people get frustrated in books, especially in romance novels, where the biggest problem is one that could just be solved if they just talk to each other. Yeah. And one person specifically said that they get frustrated sometimes when it's like every time the readers are like the two main characters are going to have a conversation that will, you know, answer everything. You know, they just keep getting interrupted. That gets starts to feel like a gimmick. I would say a few good interruptions can be used beautifully. But, you know, yes, if every time the characters are like, I wanted to talk to you about it, it's like, oh, no, an explosion. And then they're like, he hates me, whatever. Your reader is going to get frustrated. But you can really use point of view in a way to make it really obvious to a reader why character A would interpret character B's action in this way that might not be correct. Because you're showing the reader like all the internal stuff that they have going on. And so that, I think, is how you can do a really good job of this miscommunication where the readers are going, oh, my gosh, no, like he thinks she's mad and she thinks that he doesn't like her.
Yeah.
And instead of them like dancing around the topic, they're not even bringing up the topic. And you as a reader understand why, because you've seen it from both characters' point of view. So
for sure.
Yes. But also, I think that's the thing, too, is whenever you can have those scenes, that's the whole, like, who has the most to lose thing. As the writer trying to decide whose point of view character point of view it is for each scene or whatever, ask yourself, like, if there's information that would diffuse the tension in the situation that only one character has, you know, then consider having that scene from the other character's point of view. Because you still have the option to present that information later, but that way you get to have all the tension possible in that scene. Yeah. So.
And you can also do that to ramp up tension. In this book that I'm currently plotting, there is something that the character A agrees to, not knowing all of the information, and the reader doesn't know all of that information. And my goal is to make it so the reader's like, yeah, do it, girl. You go take back your power. But then in the next scene, we like in the next chapter from another point of view, we learn the consequence of taking back that power mm-hmm. and doing it that way. And so as a reader, my hope is that you'll have that like gut churning of, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And now they have to get to each other and those characters have to communicate that. But then there's feelings involved. And it's such a great way to just keep that rolling, right? And yeah. I think my process is always giving the reader a question. Mm-hmm. Oh no, how will that character respond? Oh no, what will she do when this happens? Or how are they going to do this? Or how are they going to feel about that? Will their relationship last once they tell them? Something that leads me into the next chapter, right? And it may be several chapters, maybe several points of view shifts later that I finally answer that, but I build and build and build on that. And that's a big thing, is just questions. Questions are so central to me.
I think you just solved one of my problems. Thank you.
I did it.
Yeah, because I think I'm in the trap right now of trying to give too much information in each. Yeah, too much emotional information, because I'm falling into that trap of thinking, oh, well, it's this main character, like this character's point of view, so I have to like show the reader everything they're thinking and feeling, and I'm realizing that that's not true. No. I don't have to, especially if your character is one who is maybe not always honest with themselves about their feelings.
You can do a lot. Because it can be such a great thing in one point of view. You really show this person is afraid to tell character B how they feel. So that informs the reader. In the next chapter, from the other person's, from character A's point of view, character A is like, I just love them so much and I want them to be happy. Why are they so standoffish?
Yes.
Yeah. Now you know. Ugh, that's why they're so standoffish. Oh my gosh. When is this going
to
break?
And it's okay as a reader to want to be like, oh my gosh, no, tell him. Just tell him that. Bah. But you also understand why they won't. Like, I mean, I have a situation, again, this is the vaguest of vague, where I have a character who does have a secret, is doing a secret thing. And the other character assumes they're doing a different secret thing. And I think it was actually my agent that had said, like, you just want to be careful that you don't create a situation where it's like, why don't they just talk about it? And for me, that's very much why I'm using the point of view, because readers will understand why character A is sneaking off to do this particular mm-hmm. thing. And readers will understand why character B is mm-hmm. assuming that it's a different secret thing that is more of a problem for them. Right. And it's set up in a way that, like, it's not a miscommunication. It's one character being like, no, it's fine. I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. I was just taking a walk. Like, what are you? And the other character's like, oh, no. Like, they're definitely lying to me. Right. So it's not the, like, I have something to tell you. Oh, no, a bomb blew up. I didn't get to tell you the truth. It's more just that the miscommunication is the assumption about what the secret is. And they are very deliberately not confronting each other about it. And because it's still a point of view, you understand. Whereas if it was just one point of view, you might just be like, girl, why don't you ask him what's going on or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so.
I think at the heart of all this advice is just, what experience do you want to create for your reader? Mm-hmm. And how do you create that with your points of view?
Yes.
So it doesn't matter. No, like, I think nothing else matters. What experience do you want to create?
Nothing.
And how do you create that with
points of view? Nothing in the world matters.
And if you can create that experience, you've done it. Like, if you want to create an experience in which they feel fulfilled with all of their characters – great, you did it. You know, if your reader says, I don't understand why I had to read this person's point of view, I don't care about them, that's boring. Mm-hmm. Is that the experience you wanted them to have?
And I would just say probably that depends, too, a lot on the point of the book that you're in.
Yeah.
You know, like I would say, like some of those like final, you know, climactic scenes or after the climax scenes, the resolution scenes, that's when you kind of do the opposite. That's when you're not necessarily picking the character that has the most to lose. That's what, like, you say the confessing their love emotional moment, that might be a moment where you do have it from the character who's been waiting and hoping that this person's going to say they love them. Because then your reader is sitting there in that character's head while they're going, oh my gosh, it's really happening. They do love me. Because at that point, you're not going for the tension as much as you're going for that relief, that unraveling that you talked about, the denouement. So,
well, I mean, even then you're still looking at who has the most to lose, because what if they don't love them?
This is true.
Then they still lose it. So it's like, it's just always tweaking that way of like thinking about.
Yeah, but if you're at the point in the book where, like, you as the reader know, okay, both these characters love each other, then it's a different decision about whose point of view you're showing it, because you're not trying to create a, oh, no, what's going to happen situation as much as you are trying to give them the reward. Like, you stuck through this book. They went through a lot. Now we happy now.
So. If you For those people who are listening that have read Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom, sorry to keep bringing it up. It's no, just right
never
there.
Never apologize for that. Yeah.
She does some wild, wild things with Matthias. Mm-hmm. That hit on exactly what you're saying. It's not what that character has to lose. It's really like once you get to the end game of the book, the what they have to lose kind of goes out the window. Then it becomes
what do they have to gain?
What do they have to gain? How do they finish their arc? Right. And if you know Crooked Kingdom and Six of Crows, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm sorry, I will buy you tissues. You can yell at me on Twitter and Instagram because it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Yeah. But it's like any writing advice, right? It only lasts for the book that you are writing, for the section you are writing, and then your advice switches over, and then you have to think about it a new way, but you're not throwing everything out the window. The question just changed. It's not what do they have to lose? It's what do they have to gain? And then how do they finish?
Yeah, I would say then it's about like what is the most satisfying for the reader. To some extent, tension is the opposite of satisfying. Like your tension is wanting more. So for the earlier parts of the book, you're trying to create tension. And for the final part of the book, you're trying to create that sense of like relief of satisfaction. And so you're making different choices about who has what point of view.
Yep.
And maybe now I can fix my opening chapters.
You can do it.
And then I'm going
to
send
it to you.
I will
say in writing dual point of view or multi point of view, the opening for me is always the hardest.
Absolutely.
Because you're getting to know your characters, you're getting to know their arc, you're getting to know everything about them, even you. Like this is
it's a different story.
It's a totally different
you have all the work of an opening chapter, and now you're dividing it up amongst different people. And in some ways, it's almost like you kind of need two opening chapters because you need to get it hooked and invested, and they both need stakes, and it's a whole thing.
For sure.
Yeah.
I found multi-point of view, sometimes it's helpful for me to go back and write the chapters before the actual book opens. And that kind of gets me rolling. Yeah. And then I can go, oh, I don't need these. Goodbye. That
might be what I'm doing right now.
Right. And it might be necessary. It's so, so helpful to just – I mean, that's how my Pitch Wars book started. I started several chapters. Like we cut – for those of you who are mentees, when the format changed to – having more than a month.
Yeah.
It's just lucky dogs. Whenever you need a pick me up, please send me a message and I will let you know about my Pitch Wars experience. Yeah. We cut 25% of the book.
Yeah.
Just cut it, just threw it out. So that was gone. The entire first act, whoop, gone. Bye.
I think I did get my first 100 pages down to 50 or 40.
Nice. So, yeah. You got it down. I deleted.
Yeah. Yeah. Deleted. No, it was different.
Yeah. And then the middle part of the book, we basically yeeted as well out the window. It was gone. And then we added a point of view, and then we changed the plot, and then all in a month. That was fun.
Yeah. I will say that just so I don't forget it. One thing I will also say, it's kind of vaguely related to point of view, is one thing that a trick that I learned in a writing class that I really enjoy is if you're having trouble making your secondary characters feel really three-dimensional, write some scenes from their point of view. Like, it doesn't even have to be a scene that is in the book, but just, like, write a page of just, like, their point of view about something. Get in their head really deeply, because then a lot of times when you go back to writing them as a non-point of view character, they just have more nuance to them. The danger of this is that if you were like me, as soon as you have written a scene from that character's point of view, then you want them to be a point of view character because you're invested. And I'm like, no, stop it. But it means that it worked because I understood them better. And so then I just have to figure out how to make that come through even when they're not the point of view character.
What if I have a trick for your trick that makes you stuck?
Oh, please.
Mine was I would write out a conversation between myself and them. Or I would write out a journal from their point of view.
Nice.
So I would just sit down and talk with them. And I would say, why are you mad? Like, why are you so upset? And then they would get to talk to me. And, like, that would force me to write in their point of view.
Oh, I love that. I always picture my characters being like, who are you? And why are you talking to me, lady?
Yeah. So, like, right. No. And then that's where, like, if that's hard, then just have them journal about it or have them write a log or, you know, something. Like,
well, at this point, I'm so invested in my secondary characters that I'm actually really excited to write just like bonus material.
Yeah.
Just write a few scenes. I have some, you know, secondary characters that have their own sort of romantic interests in book two, and they're not point of view characters, but like I still want to write it because of the nature, especially when it's secondary characters having some sort of a romantic thing. It's not going to be on the page a lot because you don't try to romance your love interest in front of a whole bunch of other characters. So if you're not a point of view character, that's just not going to be happening on the page. And so I want to write those. Like, I want, because I need to know what's happening behind the scenes of these other plot lines. And the nice thing now that the fact that this book is actually, going to be on shelves, and hopefully by then we'll have readers who care too, is that it can be bonus material. But because I do have, there's one secondary love story that is almost entirely off the page, because at least one of my main characters is going to be quite clueless about what's happening until the end. But it's, for me, it's so satisfying to try to figure out how to show just enough of that from the point of view of a character that doesn't actually understand what's happening, so that but the readers will, I think, and so that by the time that those secondary characters have their big moment, the readers will be like, oh, finally, I want to kind of create that sense of, like, as the reader, you want to be, like, peeking through doors and being like, what are they doing? Wait, hold on. Main character, hold on a sec. There's something interesting going on over there. Could you please go look over there? and so that it'll have that satisfaction of being like, oh, finally, it's not a secret anymore. But yeah, so maybe that's what I need to do to get unstuck, is just write all my little secondary character fanfic now.
Do it.
Well, that feels like a good place to stop.
Yay,
we did it. Look at it. We did it.
We did it. We actually made an episode. I'm proud of us.
So we have a bunch of interviews scheduled, so that'll be cool too.
Whoop, whoop.
Yay. All right. Well, I kind of just said what I'm going to do this week. Oh, I also need to write my acknowledgments. Scary. And I don't know when this episode will air. Well, wait, no. Will this episode air next week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then I'm just going to say it. I don't even know if I have permission to say this. I don't even know if this is true. But I'm going to say, people, stay tuned for a cover reveal, because I feel like it's coming soon. No one has told me when it will be, but I feel like it's got to be soon. I think ARCs are going to be printed soon, and they're going to need a cover. So I'm just putting that out there right now. Stay tuned on Twitter and Instagram, because
we're getting down. I think it's not. You're not saying that it's going to be revealed. You just have a feeling, because the
I'm not announcing a date because I don't know when it's going to be, but I feel like it's getting close. So, and I don't think it's going to be this week. So yeah, if you're listening to this on Monday the 23rd, just check in to social media frequently, because who knows.
Tip for acknowledgments as you're working on your book and sharing with people.
Oh my gosh, write down everything.
Note on your phone.
Everything.
That you, every time somebody helps you with something and you're like, I need to thank this person, you just write their name down.
Also, just practice thinking of as many ways to say thank you as possible, because I'm realizing, I think that's honestly what's, because I actually do think I know everyone I need to acknowledge. It's more just the like, it just like, it hurts my soul to have an entire page that just says thank you to so-and-so, thank you to so-and-so, thank you to so-and-so. Like, it just feels repetitive. So it's like literally just coming up with ways to be like, I'm so grateful for, I'm so thankful for, I'm so fortunate to have, just so it doesn't read like a list.
Or we could all be like, Jeff Bishop. I do believe Jeff's name on Twitter is actually Jeff Boyardee.
I think yes.
And Jeff creates TikToks of rating.
I think he changed. It is Jeff Boyardee, but his actual handle is The Jeff Bishop. But yes.
Go watch all of Jeff's TikToks. It's rating my friends' books based on what they said about me in the acknowledgments. Yes. So that kind of gives you a fantastic idea of how to thank people and how not to thank people, I guess. Yes.
It's great. Yeah,
they crack me up every time.
It's so funny. It's a hoot. Yeah. And I think the hard thing, too, is I didn't realize how early you have to turn these things in, which is a weird thing, too, as a writer, because there's a lot of us in the 22 debut group that are like, but I haven't met everyone on my team yet. How do I thank people I don't know? And it's very common for your editor to give you a list of people that are working in your book. Because sometimes, depending on the imprint, like, your editor might be the go-between. Like, you might not actually directly interact with a lot of people. Yeah. So it's good to get that list. But at the same time, it is. It's so early in the game that it can be a little weird to be like, thank you so much to my wonderful, like, say, publicist, when you're like, I haven't met my publicist yet, but I'm sure they're wonderful. But I think a lot of times, you'll have the option to edit them closer to the date, but they do need kind of everything just in place early on.
Yeah.
So we shall see. But what about you? What are you up to this week? Goals for this week?
I talked with two of our wonderful friends, Natalie, who hasn't been on the show yet, but she will.
She will.
Eventually. And LJ. And we really cracked open my newest book idea. So my goal is to actually, like, finish the synopsis to, like, you know, temp pole degree and then start drafting Act One. Yay. And then hopefully we'll see where that goes. But I think it'll be a fast draft, actually, which is weird for me.
Yeah. I love a fast draft.
Yum, yum.
I miss a fast draft. Someday. Yes. We'll just got to get out of that second book.
It'll be a fast draft, and then
it could be.
It never is. It's painful.
Chase that enthusiasm, you know? Do it. All right. Well, folks, stay tuned for interviews with lots of cool people coming up soon. And yeah.
Everyone, thank you again for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate it. Remember, if you liked what you heard, go to iTunes, like, subscribe, and give us a rating. We seriously appreciate it. It helps us reach a broader audience. It lets them know how much you love our giggly talks. And we will see you next time. Bye, Pitches!